welcome to another edition of the Open Paddock Rallycast. This is episode 22 of our Rallycast series. This week, we will have a heavy focus on the WRC and a preview of the upcoming Wales Rally GB, of which our very own Ian Holmes will be attending. Championships will likely be decided at this penultimate round of the WRC, and meanwhile, the silly season just keeps getting sillier. This is Open Paddock, the Rallycast. Well, it's been a little while since we've done one of these rally casts, Ian, because apparently those in the paddock interviews become a bit popular. Honestly, there isn't much we enjoy more than interviewing drivers, co-drivers, organizers, and everybody involved in the sport. But, you know, if you and I don't get together and chat every now and then about all the other goings-on because there's always more news, probably liable to explode.
very true.
So, without further ado, let's talk some WRC. We have to make this kind of quick because apparently I'm keeping someone from packing. Ian, how excited are you?
A little excited. Let's just say I started packing about 4 weeks ago. Yeah, I've actually got past the packing part now, and I'm now into the stage where I'm visualizing driving on the other side of the road, so I don't have any problem with that when I get back to England. So the suitcase is nicely full, so, and I shall be doing my best to represent US stage rally over there. I've picked out all my US stage rally t-shirts and sweatshirts and hats and something. So if somebody sees me stage side and says, "Oh, Jibber, we rally," what's that then? I can tell them all about rallying.
Oh, Jibber, we rally. Love it. That's right. What if STPR had like Susquehannock on it, right?
Yeah, how would you manage that? I can't pronounce I can't pronounce it either.
Lots of practice.
That's it.
Well, that's awesome that you're going to be representing North American US rally over there back home in GB. Should be an awesome event, but you know, as we lead into that event, we of course had Rally Spain. We never got a chance to really talk about it because we've been so busy. Quick recap, most of you guys, folks that follow this, I'm guessing you watch WRC Plus like we do, or follow what's going on in the news. And, we have to say it should be interesting, especially now that Citroën's kind of made a statement that their car isn't quite so as bad as we thought, is it?
No, they always said that it was good on tarmac, and it certainly showed that good form. I mean, Chris Meek just crushed everybody on tarmac, didn't he? I mean, he wasn't very happy on the first day because of the gravel. He just managed to stay in touch with everybody, but then on the first stage of the second day, he just went hell for leather and crushed everybody and got such a lead that it was, for the rest of the time, he was just managing his lead, basically. It was a great performance. Yeah, I mean, we've been hard on Citroën all the way through the season, so I think we have to give them credit where credit is due for Spain.
Yeah, it reminded me, you know, the way he was able to, so in such a relaxed manner, have such high performance compared to everybody else, reminded me a lot of how things started at Tour de Course. But unfortunately, you know, that one, the engine went, right? So aside from the mechanical issue, which is kind of unheard of these days, we know the car's quick on tarmac. And that's also, I think, a reason why maybe that first day he wasn't quite as quick, because the first day's gravel, right? So, you know, really was able to show itself. But, you know, the nice thing here for me was Meek was able to come back and show, look, I can win. I am quick. I'm here to stay. I don't want to leave the sport. I don't want to leave Citroën. It wasn't me. It was the car. Come on, folks, right? And I agree. I mean, I think he made that loud and clear with his performance, to be honest.
Yeah. When he's on his game, there are a few peers, you know. He's when he's on his game, he's a the top of his field. So we're really, really pleased that he did so well and he's got his confidence back, and he'll be feeling good about going into Wales, even though Wales is, of course, a gravel rally and the Citroen probably won't be as well suited to that surface. But we'll have to see. You know, you've got to wonder if some of the testing that that Loeb did on tarmac, if that had any bearing on the improvement of the Citroen at during Spain.
Possibly. I mean, the car was already good on tarmac, so mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's always more. The more testing you can have, the better, right?
Yeah.
So. Yeah, don't know what to say there other than, you know, we know the car's quick on that surface. Issues obviously seem to be with how it was so twitchy and whatnot on the gravel. Mm-hmm. On the gravel, one that really stood out was Andreas Mikkelsen, his first time competing in the Hyundai. He's now signed on for 2 years with the Hyundai team, which make things kind of interesting with the way contracts are still for another year for many drivers there. They haven't looked like that they wanted to make a change, but, you know, Patton's performance hasn't quite been up to even his own standards, obviously. Sordo's been kind of, you know, really the only shining light for the team has been Thierry Neuville, who's once again looking at potentially being runner-up in the championship.
Yeah, you've got a feel for him. I mean, he started off the season with a series of unfortunate events, and then in the middle of the season he was on form, wasn't he? Took two rally wins, didn't he? And then now is the bad luck is coming back.
Yeah, so. He's, you know, some were his own mistakes, but some of them, mm-hmm. Yeah, like Germany, what happened to Spain was just like with Germany, right?
Yeah.
You take a little cut and the whole darn suspension breaks, and mm-hmm. it shows that there's a weak point on that car. As good as it's been on gravel, when they set it up for that stiffer setup on tarmac, seems like it's got quite the weakness there.
Yeah, yeah. And the incredible thing is like that Mikkelsen and Sordo went out on the exact same corner, didn't they? They both took the exact same line, hit the exact same concrete block, and basically pulled over to the side of the road the exact same distance down the road. So, I mean, if it had just been those two crashing off with the damage, you could have said, oh, no, that was just unfortunate. It's not a structural problem with the car. But now you've had all three of them had the same problem and the same. It was the same wheel, wasn't it? It was the front driver. It was the front passenger side wheel, wasn't it? So,
and the thing is the way you can tell that's truly a weakness on that car is everybody else was taking that same cut, and they didn't have that same problem. But the challenge, you know, as we've talked about before, is if you just strengthen one spot, though, you've got to be worried, right? This is going to take some development time for them, because if you strengthen the one spot that broke, that's going to now transfer that energy somewhere else and create maybe another weakness. So they're going to have some work to do in the offseason to really narrow down how to balance where to relieve that stress. And that maybe that's what happened, is maybe there was another point that they strengthened and it weakened this spot. All the energy went here, right? It's always such a challenge to develop a car to get it just right. But
absolutely, yeah.
Now, that also hurts Hyundai in their run for the Manufacturers' Championship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it looks... Because they are fielding four cars in Wales, aren't they? They're Neuville, Mikkelsen, Sordo, and Patton are all...
Right, but only two can score points, or is it three?
Three, I believe. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, that having four drivers there increases their chances of taking. Having three.
Now, wait a minute. I think you have to nominate the three, though. I don't think it's anywhere they finish, is it? That seems a little extreme. Usually, when it's like, at least with driver or not drivers, but usually when it came to manufacturer points in the past, you had like when they would run three cars, but they'd only have, but they had to nominate two. So you usually have to nominate, these are the cars that are going to be scoring points for us. that other car out here, it's not going to be able to. So unless they change the rule dramatically, I know they added the third car capability this year, but I didn't realize that it could be maybe finish anywhere. You know what I mean? Or it could be any driver, I mean, and any car. That seems a little odd, but maybe. That'd be a big give, I'll say that. Because whoever decides to field more cars will definitely win the championship, no matter the manufacturer's championship, no matter what it seems. Just by just getting a bunch out there, unless they, of course, DNF like the Hyundais did. Now, on the bright side of the manufacturer championship is, of course, Ogier and Tanak. Well, and in the drivers' championship, Tanak moves into second by 1 point, I think, ahead of Neuville now in the drivers' title, and M Sport has just 4 points. To win the manufacturer's title. This is the car that had the least development time. They were the last one to get theirs officially homologated, right? And they were running what they called a mule car, which is, oh, this is basically has a lot of the components we're running on, but it didn't have the full aero kit, it didn't have the full, setup that they were that they were going to be running in 2017. And they had the shortest development time as far as testing and all that stuff. Meanwhile, Citroën had spent the whole year doing it, Hyundai as well. Then, you've got also the least budget. They're still not backed by Ford, regardless of the logo on the car. This is all M Sport doing their thing, and the sponsors that help them. And yet, here they are, the little team that could. I mean, they're like the ultimate privateer manufacturer.
I mean, I mean, let's face it, the champ the Constructors' Championship is sewn up. I mean, you're asking the most consistent team in the championship this year to not score any points at all over the next two events. I mean, you just can't see it happening, can you?
Not with Ogier driving one of the cars.
No,
And
indeed. So,
Tanak. Tanak has been exceptional. I mean, just I had not really expected him to be at this pace and consistency at the same time this quickly after his previous results have always been kind of up and down. Very consistent, very quick. But let's talk about Wales. Let's talk about Wales.
Oh,
You're going to
let's
be
talk about
going to
Wales.
Wales. Where is Ian going to be in Wales?
Oh, he's going to be all over the place. We just start very early on. The wife and I decided that we would go with the guided tour option rather than trek about all over the North Wales forests and mountains ourselves. Because, like I've said before, I've lived in North Wales for a couple of years and vacationed there every summer for 10, 12 years or so. So I know a lot of the roads. I know what the roads are like, and I know what they're likely going to be like with lots of rally fans blocking them up, trying to get from stage 12 to stage 13, and etc. So we're going with rallytravel.com, and they have a fully escorted tour,
I
and
have
we.
heard about these. It's an all-encompassing package, and they do it for pretty much every round of the WRC, I believe, right?
As far as I can tell you, every round of the WRC, they have a very, very experienced staff of ex drivers and co-drivers and even team managers who put this whole package together. And my official itinerary arrived by email just the other day, actually. So I can let you know exactly where we're going to be and what we're going to be doing. So on the first day, Thursday. That's the day of the Tyr Prince special stage, the stage one at the trotting track. We will be there for that, and the autograph session, the driver's autograph session before that, we'll be there for that as well. So we'll be seeing that on the Thursday. On the Friday, we spend the whole day at Sweet Lamb Rally Complex, which is
Oh, classic.
pretty awesome, sir.
So do you got, and I'm guessing because this package deal, you're all on buses and whatnot, it's kind of a VIP deal, right? They've got a designated spot that people will be watching. They don't like bus you to like the start of the stage and you hike to a spot. It's
No.
designated, right?
Oh wait, but well, basically at Sweet Lamb, all everybody does is stand on the side of a hill. There are special little VIP extras that you can buy.
Oh, add-ons, gotcha.
Add-ons, we are having one add-on, but we'll talk about that in a little minute after we've got away from Sweet Lamb. But yeah, but Sweet Lamb is like where everybody goes is like the big bowl at the bottom of the hill. You come
Yeah, I can
down
see
the
him
hill,
screaming down, hit the
do the water
hairpin.
splash in the, and then do the hairpin and the drifting turn, and then climb over and then fly over a bridge and up the hill on the other side. So yeah, so you can see, apparently you can see the cars for over a minute if you're stood in the right place.
Well, I've played it many times on Dirt Rally, so I'm quite familiar with that area.
So,
It's as close as I'm going to get anytime soon, anyway.
That's pretty cool. We'll be pretty excited about going to Sweet Lamb. So, and then after Sweet Lamb's done, we head off back to Deeside, where wife and I have VIP tickets for the M Sport service. Yeah,
VIP
you're
of the service.
VIP tickets to the service. So we will get inside the M Sport service area and be fed and watered, and we'll be able to watch them doing the repairs to all the cars and setting them up for the next day.
If they do it right, they're mostly going to be just hosing them off and changing the tires.
Yeah, pretty. It's yeah. This
If they
the
do it right.
if they yeah, the, you
Hopefully
don't
nothing
want to see
breaks.
them. You don't want to see them doing too many repairs, because that might mean that somebody is in running Rally 2 the next day.
Right, exactly. It
Yeah.
is
So.
phenomenal, though. Somebody hears just a little noise out of a transmission or something like that, and they can do that. They can swap an entire transmission in 30 minutes. That's just crazy.
Yeah, incredible. So maybe we'll see something like that. Maybe we won't. But the organizers said they can't guarantee that any of the drivers and co-drivers will entertain us for a while. But in all the years they've been doing this, it's never happened that they've not had a driver or co-driver come and
They
talk to the car.
always tend to come out and visit for a bit, huh?
Yeah.
That's
So
awesome.
that would be pretty cool. So. Yeah, and then on Saturday we go out nice and early for the stage 9 is the Dyfnant Forest. So we actually do get out onto into the proper Welsh forests. The sun won't even be up when we get out on stage there. So that's going to be pretty exciting. You can't beat Welsh Forest rally stages in the dark. So we'll
Oh
be
yeah, I think to me one of the favorite things is just you can just hear them coming because everything's a little quieter at night, right? And you just hear them coming from a distance, screaming through the woods. The lights start to flicker, before they come around that corner. Yeah, then they go screaming by and pops and bangs, glowing brake rotors, fire spitting out the back. I mean, what an experience! That sounds awesome.
And then after we've done that, we head back into England for the stage 14, the Rally Fest at Cholmondeley Castle.
Oh, the
Now
castle
that's
stage. Yeah, that little super special goes around there, right?
And it's more than just the rally cars there, of course, because there's a whole thing about it. It's going to be a bit it's a huge big festival of rally. I mean, not only will the World Rally cars compete over this stage, but they've also got demonstration runs from Group N cars, Group B cars,
Ooh.
classic cars from way rally cars from way back when. I mean, that's going to be a pretty amazing thing to watch, I think. So yeah, doubly
Yeah, just
excited
to
about that.
hear the hear
So.
like a Metro 6R4 or to hear a the Audi Quattro S1, that 5-cylinder turbo. Oh my God, those things just sound awesome. Yeah, that's cool. So the whole little rally fest kind of going on there, huh?
Yeah, so that's going to be pretty exciting. And then Sunday, the final day, because of the proximity of the Brennig and Alwyn stages, Alwyn, of course, being the final stage and being the power stage, we are actually able to walk between the stages. We'll arrive in time for them to see them do the first pass of Brennig, and then we'll be able to walk over the over basically no more than walk over the road and through a parking lot and be able to watch them in Alwyn. And then when they've done Alwyn, we'll just turn around and go back the way we came, and we'll be able to watch them on the power stage on Brennig.
Awesome. So they got this whole loop just all set up, and I'm guessing also these buses get kind of a, you know, as far as traffic and stuff like that, because it's all a packaged kind of deal or whatever. They've got stuff with the organizers to make sure they kind of get kind of priority to get through.
Yeah.
Huh?
I'm sure they do. I mean, they had that deal at Ojibwe, didn't they? Because we saw them as we were saw the bus coming in. We went into when we were doing the live stream from Crossroads Jump. We followed in on the path that the track that the bus came in on. So yeah, I'm sure they probably have their own separate way in. So, but yeah, apparently, and also apparently, there's a grandstand set up for us at the end of the power stage, where we will be able to see the presentations of and the champagne spraying and all that at the end of the event.
So my other question with this is, you know, being part of this like kind of package deal with Rally Travel, and I've kind of heard the commercials. They've talked about them. Who was it? I think one of the times that Absolute Rally, I think, maybe had a sponsor of theirs. Something. You know, I've kind of heard about them anyways. Maybe it was WRC Radio said something about them once or something. But I was wondering, do they have a, like, where you get like an experienced like commentator or something like that, kind of give you guys, keep you guys up to date what's going on, somebody that gets you know, information that helps, that goes along with this, or how does that work?
We have concierges on the bus who are experienced rally drivers, co-drivers, tour guides, and they'll be able to keep us appraised of the situation, what's going on with who's in the lead, who's crashed out, everything like that. But that, a lot of that all depends on being able to get like cell phone service in the middle of the Welsh forests and Welsh mountains. So we'll just have to see how that all sorts itself out.
Really excited for you to be out there. We're going to be looking for, you know, pictures and some sort of, you know, info about that.
I'll tell you what I'll do, Mike. Just for you, I'll make this offer just this once, that I will be there, and I will try and post a little like scene setting video to the Open Paddock Facebook page, you know, just to get an idea of what it's like. You'll be able to see the crowds and stuff like that, so you can get a feel of what it's like to be in the crowd at a WRC event.
Well, that sounds awesome. I'm really looking forward to your post. We'll live all vicariously through the cell phone images and wise words of Ian Holmes while you're there in Wales. Really excited to hear about that. Now, it's not just the WRC that's competing, and it'll be WRC, WRC2, you know, and that'll be there. But there's also national champion drivers. Well, I guess it's not a championship, right? It's not part of the BRC this year, but there's plenty of national competitors will be in there in some pretty cool cars. Including some people we might recognize, right?
Yeah, yes, indeed. Yeah, this is a really interesting part of the event that the organizers gave the national guys the chance to either run in the two-day national or compete for the four full days against the big WRC cars. So you'll be seeing cars that are way past their homologation date competing against these big new WRC cars. And I was just casting my eye through the list, and we'll see a very interesting name down there driving a Vauxhall Adam, whatever a Vauxhall Adam is, the most popular city car in Germany. So it's strange that something that's like really small is quite a handy little rally car. And you will not believe who's driving a Vauxhall Adam. It's Jimmy McRae.
Oh, how cool is that? That's
Jimmy
cool.
Yep, so I'm sure he's going to get a huge cheer every time he goes past any crowds anywhere. So that's pretty exciting, that is.
So, you know, that's kind of how, you know, his son Colin got popular, was when he was slinging a two-wheel drive car is how he got noticed, wasn't it?
That's it for sure. Yeah, he driving his woefully underpowered cars right to the edge and beating people with much more powerful machinery. Yes, yes. So I've got a couple of Mark II Ford Escorts in here, and a couple of Subaru Imprezas and a couple of Mitsubishi Lancer Evos. But what we should probably do is mention the give a mention to the friends of the show who are competing.
Certainly, yeah.
Yeah, yes, because we've got no less than three friends of the show that I know of that are competing. So the first one is like Rhiannon Gelsomino, of course. She was with us just a month or two ago, and she's actually co-driving for John McCrone, and she co-drove for him last year in four rounds of the Scottish Rally Championship.
And that's right.
And I think they won their class in the Scottish Rally Championship.
And that's so, in a Fiesta R5, I believe?
That's in a Fiesta R5, yes.
That's great. Yeah, that's McCrone. Wow, he's quick. That would be a fun ride. You're going to have to start reading faster.
Yeah, so the other friend of the show that we're familiar with, a guy who we had on last year just after a Rally Australia, Phil Hall.
Oh, yes. Yeah, young Phil Hall. He's been making moves and getting more and more rides. Yeah.
Yeah, he's been making quite the name for himself this year in Europe. So, yeah, he's co-driving for fellow Brit Tom Williams. Now, Tom Williams might be a name that nobody knows, but you'll certainly know his godfather. His godfather was the late, great Richard Burns.
Wow.
So how that worked is Tom's father, David Williams, discovered Richard Burns and was his mentor in the early days.
Wow.
So, yeah, there's a bit of a link to a legend there. So, and Tom is actually quite a handy driver. He was last year he was British Rally champion in Group 5, Class 5, which is like a lower powered. It's like a academy class, cadet class, I think they call it, or something like that. So, but I believe he was champion in that. So he's now moving up the ladder, and maybe he can be the next great British hope, you know.
No. Oh. Well, we got an Irishman that we're familiar with here. Niall Burns, he's a co-driver that we know from competing here in the States alongside Brenton Kelly. He's also co-driven, I think, a Canadian round for Nick Roberts once and whatnot. So Niall is going to be also in a Fiesta R5 with James Slaughter. So be nice to see how well they do. Obviously following all this stuff on Facebooks and Twitters and things like that to see how they're doing. That's gonna be a lot of cars competing with all the WRC guys, WRC2 guys, the national guys. I mean, how big is the entry list?
There are 74 in the international. That includes the WRC and the other guys, and then there's another 80 some in the national.
Whoa! So those volunteers are gonna be working late.
Well, but the national the national guys only do like Saturday and Sunday, so
okay.
So they have a much shorter event. It's Saturday and Sunday are going to be long days for people.
Yeah, that's going to make for some long days for sure. Oh man! So now we boil down to our good old thing: make a prediction. Have you been thinking about this? I've been kind of pondering. It's so hard to tell what's going to happen. You need a weather report, and we're still a little ways out.
I know what I want.
Okay. You know,
I want an M Sport 1-2-3 with Elvin Evans on the top step, because I think that would be the perfect end to his season. You know, he's had two really good second places, one unfortunate second place, let's be honest, and one second place that was a really good, strong second place. And I think, you know, to see him on the top step of the podium in his national rally, you know, he's he's a pretty big sports star in Wales right now, and yeah, they would be singing Hen Flad Fy Na Ddau on the streets of Llanfair Pwllgyn Gilgoch Gera Swindrobwyr Llantysilio Gogogoch that on Sunday night.
Is that a real place?
Oh yes, that is a real place for sure. Yeah,
you're been... pulling my leg.
I've been trying to get that one into a podcast for weeks.
Oh, jeez. But it is a confusing language, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But yeah, that's what I would really like to see, is Elvin Evans on the top step. But I mean, it's like, I think what we really need to see is Ford clean up there in the home rally. You know, of course, I'd also be quite happy if Chris Meek was on the podium or Craig Breen as well. But yeah, I really want Elvin on the top step. I don't know whether the DMAC gravel tires are going to be suitable in these conditions, but we'll just have to see what the conditions are.
So your 1-2-3 right now is Elvin Evans, yeah, followed by...
I'll go with Ogier and then Tanak.
All right. Well, I'm going to kind of copy you with the Elvin Evans part. I think his starting position is good, and the DMAC tire has traditionally been better on the surface. It's colder out. It's a little bit softer compound, but not too soft. I think that it will do well in Wales like it did last year. So I think, provided there's no mechanical issues, I think Elvin will definitely be up there on the top step. That's where it gets tougher, is after that. I think Thierry Neuville is actually going to push hard. And I think he's going to end up right there on the podium as well. And Tanak, though, after his deal being done, that we'll talk about in a sec, he might just kind of be more relaxed. But then again, he's going to want that second place. Yeah. So I'm going to reverse a little bit. I'm going to say it's going to be Evans, Tanak, and then I think Neuville, and I think Ogier may be in fourth, mainly because he's going to suffer from the sweeping. There you go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do top know that... four instead of top three.
Yeah, we will see. I think, though, that Ogier is going to probably drive really hard, because I've seen him quoted as saying he doesn't want to be fighting for the title in Australia.
Cause... as long as he's, you know, like just one spot behind Neuville, that's fine.
Good. Yeah.
Right? So yeah. I think he's going to keep Neuville at arm's length, you know, keep in touch with him. But, Neuville being the third car on the road is going to have a little bit of an advantage. Not as huge an advantage, though. I mean, Elvin's going to be the one that's going to get the bigger advantage there. I'd like to see Hayden Padden do really well here. Because you've got all four, right, of the Hyundais there. So that's the surface that Padden should be really good at. It's kind of similar to what he's got back home. So I would love to see Padden make a big push, but I can also see him being more reserved because he doesn't want to wad it up with now having a more limited schedule than what he started out with. So speaking of Tanak and some silly season stuff, pretty big news today.
Yeah. I got up this morning and put on my computer, and there it was straight in front of me. Tanak to Toyota. So
the rumors are now confirmed.
The rumors are confirmed. Yes. So, yeah, he's got a drive for Toyota next season. Now, good luck to him, but it's like,
what's your opinion?
I don't know. You know, it's do you think the Toyota is still good enough? Now, is it? Do you think next year it will be good enough? I mean, it's still in its like teething phase, really, isn't it? It's still in its development phase. It's a question of how long that development phase is going on. I think he could be very good in the Toyota. I think the Toyota will benefit from him. But I can't help thinking that maybe it won't be reliable enough next year. Maybe the year after. Maybe if he's got a 2-year deal in his second year, that'll be a year for him. But yeah. The Toyota has been a bit temperamental the past couple of rounds. So.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, what we've seen from the Toyota hasn't been consistent because sometimes the driver's not being consistent, right? Obviously, it did well in Finland. But we've seen saw also in Finland where Yaris car just stopped, right? If they can get the thing is that Toyota has the money. You know, they're a well-backed team. You know, you look at M Sport and they're going to be wrapping up this manufacturer title, and they're the ones that had the least amount of development time. They had the least, you know, amount of money to back them, and yet they've been so consistent. Obviously, they're going to do minor improvements to make the car even better for next season. But I think some of these teams with the more money during the offseason are going to be able to make larger leaps to get closer to Ford, or I should say to M Sport. Hope Ford comes back, but we'll get to that. I think the Toyota will be a threat, but I don't think it's going to win the manufacturer title next year. I think it's going to win some rounds. I think we'll see it. It seemed like it was looking really good on the tarmac. I think in some of the, you know, less tight and twisty stuff, it was really quick on the gravel as well. We'll have to see what they come up with next. But I don't think it's a bad move for Tanak. I think it's actually a good move for him
No.
to go to a different team. He's only really known M Sport at the top level. The other thing that I'm wondering is, could part of this factor in the fact that he won't, you know, his home base for the team will no longer be several time zones away from home? You know, that could be a factor. He's
That could,
had a second kid now, right?
If you're a doting father, if you love your kids, it's nice to be closer to your family. That's very, very true.
I mean, M Sport is the ultimate family team, but you know, still, if you're that far away from him, it's pretty tough. So I can imagine that maybe being a factor in his decision making. The other thing I would have to say is this has to be that there's something missing from that announcement. It was the press release. It did not say for how long the deal was for. That was completely absent from it. I was looking at for that. I'm like, is it a 2-year contract? Is it a 3-year? What is it? You know for sure he didn't make the move unless it was a multi-year. There'd be no
Absolutely,
point.
yeah, you
There'd be
don't.
no point.
No.
So my guess is it's at least 2 years, maybe even three. And I think that you know, running alongside Latvala won't feel as threatened yet until he starts winning, maybe. And I think they'll have a good relationship there. So I think it's a good fit. I think it's a better fit than if Ogier went there. I think Latvala would just completely
Oh, for
cave.
sure.
So.
But the person you've got to feel sorry for all in for all this is Juho Hänninen, of course, because Kai Lindstrom, his co-driver, is going to be sporting director of the team, and so Juho's got no co-driver, and he's very probably got no drive for next year. So
Well,
and
we already know that
he
he's not going to be in Australia. They announced that
so
in
are we.
Australia that they're going to be doing only two cars, and so Juho won't be one of them. That's basically already putting the writing on the wall that Juho's not going to be there next year. I think we kind of saw the writing on the wall by mid-season. Juho just wasn't performing at the level I think that they expected.
But the irony is, of course, from then on in, he became Mr. Dependable, didn't he?
He did. He did.
So he's like Craig Breen in a way, isn't he? Because great Craig Breen is like Mr. Fifth Place, isn't he? And Juho Hänninen, towards the end of the season, was becoming Mr. Dependable, and Toyota could rely on him to get points. So I'm feeling sorry for Juho,
Yeah, but if
because
you had a choice
I don't.
between Oikk Tanak and Juho Hänninen, who would you pick?
Well, that's true. Don't make me make a decision like that. There's no decision
Right,
there.
exactly. So, I mean, with that, you know, being as an option for them, it's obvious what they took. And we've already seen the young talent that is,
Rovanperä?
no, the other
Who's
one.
Utnan? Oh, you mean Lappi?
Lappi, there we go. Lappi. I mess that up all the time. I don't know why. He's, you know, already proven himself with a win, a comfortable win. He just says that, you know, he needs more experience on the state, you know, of each of the rallies. He hasn't even been to all of them because when he did WRC2, you know, you can skip certain rounds and whatnot. So, you know, I think it's good all around team that they'll have, and I think that'll be a pretty big threat, for sure for everybody. So then that bears in mind, will Ogier stay or will he go? Or yeah, and then where will he go? So this obviously doesn't play into a decision from Citrin. And you know Citrin's still going for him. But at this point, it's kind of well already decided he's not going to go to Hyundai, and he's not going to go to Toyota.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that only leaves Citrin.
Yeah. But I think that the longer the silence about his move goes on, the more likely it is that he goes to Ford. He stays with M Sport. Well, actually, he might even go to Ford because
Ford.
He might. Well, M Sport will become Ford. The longer this goes on, the quieter things remain. And well, of course, we know Ford are going to win the Constructors' title, and we're pretty certain Ogier is going to. M Sport, yeah, I'm getting ahead of myself. It's like people will think, oh, Ian's got inside information. He knows something. He keeps letting this slip of the tongue about Ford go. But no,
well,
no,
you did
I don't
say you were going to get a tour of M Sport, and so when you're there, you better be dropping questions.
I'll see what I can do. Yeah, I think Ogier will. The longer it goes on, the longer the silence goes on, the more likely is that Ogier will stay with M Sport. And the more likely it is that Ford will return, because Ford, of course, have cut off they've stopped their rallycross team, and so that's free.
And they stopped that like 3 years early. They had a 5-year deal. Mm-hmm. 2 years in, they cut it off.
Cut it off, and all they're going to do is support Ken Block in his Hoonigan ventures. Is Jim Carner and stuff like that. So I Ford have certainly freed up some money. I just think they're just maybe waiting the right time to make the announcement.
That's a good theory. A lot of people have had that theory. Colin Clark has had his kitchen table stuff, which is if you haven't listened to him, we love Colin. Had him on the show a few times in years past. It's been a couple of years though, so we're gonna have to get him back on. Say hi to him for me when you're there.
If I say Mike Shaw says hi, he'll know who I'm talking about.
If you say Mike Shaw from Oregon Trail Rally, yeah, he'll know who I'm at.
Uh-huh. Who I am. Okay. Yep.
He came to this event. Come on. Uh-huh. So he'll remember. Will Ford come back? I don't know. I think Ogier can stay even if maybe Ford doesn't come back. Mm-hmm. If they find sponsorship help for him.
Yeah.
But I think you're right in that Ogier is trying to stay. I think he wants to stay.
Yeah.
You know, just some of the feels. From what I hear from everybody, the pictures I've seen while he's at M Sport, he's so happy, mm-hmm. so relaxed.
Yeah.
You know, when he was at Volkswagen, he was doing the job.
Yeah.
He was the ultimate, professional. Not to say he's a professional anymore, mm-hmm. But here he's found the M Sport family. And not only that, he's built up everyone around him.
Yeah.
This is something actually even Colin mentioned, and I totally 110% agree with this, is that, when he first got there, things were a little stressful. The car, he even said on stage end, the car wasn't doing what he wanted it to, or was doing unexpected things.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked with the team, and guys were working all night long on weekends, all that stuff, adjusting things and testing. And before you know it, the car has been the best of the lot out there. And on top of that, his teammates have been elevated as well.
Yeah,
he's sharing that knowledge, sharing that mm-hmm. professionalism.
Yeah.
And now look, Wout Van Aert is sitting second in the championship right mm-hmm. now.
Yeah.
And then, getting a nice lucrative contract to go to Toyota. So Elvin Evans, almost getting a win, all that. It's all, I think, because Ogier has helped build that up around him. One person won't, be the decider of a team as far as just, you can't win it all with just one person, but you can be a great team leader.
Yeah.
And I think that's what he is.
Yes, he's found a new way. He's found a new way to win he's found a new way to win the title. There were years when he won every round of the WRC except one or two, weren't there?
Yeah, the Volkswagen, the car was just so remarkable compared to everybody else. And then, you know, plus his skill level, you know, yeah, just the combination was, yeah, was a little much compared to the competition that he had. Yeah.
And now he knows that the things with the cars are different, and he pushes when he needs to, and he lets off when he can. And yeah, he's found a new way to win, and
So I guess that's the question is does he want to continue in the environment that he's helped nurture, or is he going to want to go back to more of a corporate environment, but you know, it's Citroën, it's French, it's you know, it's closer to home, all that stuff. So I think that's I guess that's kind of where we're at, is that decision. Will Ford come back though? I'm thinking it's a 70% no, 30% chance of yes.
Well, I would actually go the other way, because if for anybody who hasn't seen Colin Clark's latest kitchen table, which came out today in the wake of the Tanakh news, he made some very interesting observations about how, Ford in Europe have always historically backed Ford performance in Europe have always historically like backed ra rallying grassroots rally as a way to promote the brand, and in 20 what 2012 when they pulled out, they and he met Colin Clark uses this phrase, the cult of personality, going with the big name Ken Block to get the name recognition associated with their cars. But that's not the way Ford operates. It's Ford in Europe have never operated like that.
Yeah,
It's
that's more like Ford America, right? Yeah.
that's so I Colin Clark makes this argument for a power struggle in within Ford, within the people who are aware of the history of Ford in rallying, and then there's the people in corporate Ford in Detroit who say, "We want to keep Ken Block as the face of Ford." So I think he makes a very compelling argument for that power struggle, and I don't see how, if you've got Ogier winning the title and Ford and M Sport winning the constructors, you'd have to be a pretty darn stupid executive to not capitalize on that. So I just think I honestly believe that Ford will be back next year.
Well, I would love to see it happen. I don't I want it to happen. We'll have to wait and see. What other like little bits of news that we've seen around? You know, we haven't done one of these little rally casts in a while. There was a thing that we chatted. I thought we talked about for a little bit that an electric car was going to make a debut, and then it did. So now my concern about an electric rally car, other than the distance it can go being very minimal. It's going to sound like a toy car. You know, it's not going to have, I'm sorry, but sound is part of the racing, right? It's, you know, when we've progressively gone to these smaller engines with the turbos, we've kind of keep taking away some of the enjoyment of the sport itself. You know, it just doesn't have that rumble that we've been accustomed to. I mean, the cars today, they're not bad. But the cars before sounded better, and the complete, you know, polar extreme of that is the electric car, where you just don't hear anything almost, or it sounds like a remote control car,
Yeah,
basically.
sounds like a radio controlled toy. Well, that was a comparison somebody made that I was reading a report about the rally that it what do they call it e-rally. It's a
Something like
Renault.
that, yeah.
Yeah, it's a and that was the criticism that somebody made who was actually there. It sounds like a radio controlled car, but it's the electric car is certainly the way forward for the general public. So and all the great forward developments in car technology are made in the sphere of racing, whether it be Formula One or NASCAR or rally or whatever. And
Well, not really
well, man, all right,
NASCAR, but they were excited when they finally went to fuel injection. Come on.
but Yes, that sounded
we've got multi-port fuel injection. Yeah, that was introduced in 1970.
Yeah. So, there you go. That's my knowledge of NASCAR for you. But yeah, Formula One and rally, they make the technological advances in their cars, and then those trickle down into the car that the person on the street can buy. So I think development of an electric car in the sphere of motorsport is vital for the development of the car on the streets. We know that the electric car is going to be a foregone conclusion. I mean, countries are saying that they will have all electric cars by like 2020 and things and crazy things like that, you know, 2024 or whenever.
So, maybe in the dense urban areas, but that's certainly not going to work where you have to go any actual miles. And so that's my question is, now this little e-rally car, do you know how many stage miles it actually ran?
No, I don't offhand, but it was only a short...
But it was a gravel rally, right?
It was a tarmac rally on a kart circuit. So it wasn't there wasn't a great deal of miles involved. But it was so that the mileage was so short that they could have actually run the rally without charging the car.
Oh, right, that's right. I remember reading a little bit about this, and it wasn't even a modified engine. They used the, you know, the output was just whatever the stock output was, same stock drivetrain. Mm-hmm. I think really all they did was tires, brakes, suspension. Actually, not brakes even. I think it was just tires and suspension, and then all the safety gear. So, the concern I have is when you start getting in the woods. And the safety issue of a quiet car, people need to know what's coming. And one thing that I've noticed is when they start doing the electrics now going up Pikes Peak, right? Hill climbs are currently the best place to see high performance, real looking cars anyway, electric cars racing. And they put sirens on them. They sound ridiculous. It sounds like a Revenger siren from from an old car alarm from the 1980s, you know.
Yeah.
And they're going up the mountain with that blaring. And talking about, not only does the lack of engine note detract from it, but if you had just sirens coming after you and going off in the distance the whole time, people will run for the hills. They're gonna be like, I am not watching this. So
yeah, I think you probably
they're gonna have to figure out something.
They'll find a way of doing something. Maybe I was just thinking about maybe some kind of like baffles on the bodywork that make vibrate the air as it passes over the car to make some noise. I don't know. I mean, that's for the technical designers to come up with. You know, it's like we're just the concerned fans.
Now, we were talking with Dave Wallingford, and he thought that we, you know, just put some speakers on it.
Yeah.
We come up with some really good fake engine sounds, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So. You know, you got all that electric power. You could put some pretty good-sized woofers on that thing. So, any other bits of news from around the world that you'd talk about before we get a little more domestic here?
I'm trying to think what else has gone on, because like you say, it's been a few weeks since we've actually done it. It's been months actually since we've done a rally cast. The electric car was a big thing. I was actually quite excited about the electric car because, like, I do think it's the way forward. But you're Mr. Skeptic, so I can see we might be having a few arguments about that in the near future, and into the middle of next year, and well on into beyond next year, maybe. I don't know. But
I think hybrids are a good way to go. I'm really excited about hybrid technology for rally cars, because with a hybrid, you know, you're going to get all that torque coming out of the corners and whatnot. It's going to really increase performance, yet you'll still be able to hear the car because the engine will still be there. And you'll still get, of course, that horsepower from the motor. The other challenge, though, that I do like that this car is bringing out is coming up with how safety workers are going to have to work with electric cars, right?
Mm-hmm.
How, when this car has an accident that's electric, you've got other concerns, right? gas burning you can see.
Yeah.
Something shorts out, and maybe it's touching the body of the car, you can't see.
Yeah.
So part of this whole process was they were, and that's good that it was, you know, kind of in this contained area, because they're training, I believe, the course workers and whatnot on how to deal with this, right?
Yeah. So, but it's an interesting development, and I shall follow it with great interest. You don't have to follow it. I'll follow it for you and keep reporting back.
Well, there you go. So, getting a little bit more domestic, we have some events coming up here. Of course, if you listen to our previous podcast, we just had Sam Albert on from the Pacific Forest Rally, and there's some great stuff. The Canadian Rally Championship, they have their TV program that they do. We can't really watch it here in the States, but you can later on in the year, they'll show it on YouTube, so you can watch that. So there should be some great coverage from that. Such an exciting, interesting rally with the changing conditions. That definitely was a tough one. But we have coming up the Tri-State Rally. That's going to be down in, well, I guess it's in the kind of Four Corners area, right? That's between Utah, Arizona, Colorado, and New Mexico, kind of right down there. Call it Tri-State because it's going to go through three of the states, not all four. Just right down in that corner. Beautiful area. I mean, you've got all those national parks down there. I think that's near the Arches National Park, and beautiful area. All kinds of crazy cool, like, rock formations and canyons and things like that. So
yeah, it's a part of America I've not been to yet, but it's a part of America that I've got to go to just because of that scenery. Yes. Yeah,
well, there you go. So next year you got to put in your schedule to Tri-State Rally being I need to co-drive for, right?
Yeah. Do you realize how busy my schedule is going to be if I let you run it for me?
Well, you know, have you seen what Rhiannon does?
Saying. You'll be my manager and take 10%. So
I'm okay with that.
Anyway, the event we should probably really talk about is the one coming up this weekend, LSPR.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, I'm to be honest, you know, even though I'm getting on a plane and flying to Europe, I'm actually going to miss LSPR a little bit. You know, it was my first time at it last year, and yeah, you know, I really, really enjoyed the experience. You know, the stages were fast, and there was a good mix. So the gravel was nice. The gravel was fast. There was really tight, twisty technical parts on some of the stages, and the turnout for the public was great. And they had this wonderful street stage to close off the event on the Saturday in downtown Houghton, which was a lot of fun. So I'm kind of like gonna miss not being there just a little tiny bit.
Not to mention it's gonna be just beautiful with the fall colors.
It is
a beautiful rally, that's for sure. All the pictures from there, just spectacular. And I wish I was going to be there too. There's supposed to be quite a bit of excitement around this one. We have a couple of interesting new developments or recent developments. Peter Fatella's back. He's been, but ever since he massively wrecked his old Subaru he was driving at 100 Acre Wood. And got hurt a little bit. He's all healed up, but his project Fiesta prototype. This is kind of like an S2000 or R5 type shell of a car with Mitsubishi Evo innards. Not too dissimilar kind of to his friend and co-competitor. I'm losing names today.
Art Grushka,
thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, Art Grushka's Mitsubishi Mirage, which... Mm-hmm. You know, basically is kind of the shell kind of thing of a Mirage, but it's all innards are Evo.
Yeah.
So it's kind of they call them prototypes or protos. It's a pretty common thing. I guess they race there in Poland, and they've kind of brought that over here to the States. And so Peter's car is finally ready. We saw it, I think it was like a year ago. We saw like that he was working on something. And then it kind of disappeared, And he competed in the old car, and then we're like, but what's going to happen?
Yeah. Didn't he
And
have a polo to start? He was getting a polo to
oh, that's
start with.
right. It was the
Yeah.
Polo at
It was a
first, and
polo
then
to start with, and then
but again,
that
it was going to be a
disappeared.
Polo version of one of these, I
Yeah,
believe,
I
as
think so.
well.
Yeah.
So, but now it's the Ford shell instead of the Polo shell, but the concept's the same. Should be a great performing car. I would guess that it performs similar to what S2000 or R5 is. It's all the cool suspension mounts and all that stuff of like an S2000 or something like that. So should be pretty cool. Excited to see that out there. But then the one that I think I know I'm really excited to see is there's going to be a Mark II Escort competing out there at LSPR that is a museum piece.
Well, so what was the? I'm just totally surprised to see a Ford Escort from Europe here in the middle of America being driven on stages in the Midwest. I mean, this is so. This is the Dirtfish Museum piece, yeah.
Yes,
And
I've seen that car many times up there at the school, and or they also bring it down when they'll bring it down to Olympus, when they have the kind of their tent set up showing off Dirtfish. They usually bring their museum cars there, and so you'll see it there. I've seen it at Oregon Trail. They've kind of brought it just to kind of look at, and it's just a beautiful little car. It's a the 1980 Eaton Yale Ford Escort Mark II. It is a replica car. It's modeled after the 1978 RAC Rally winner, which was the previous name for the Wales Rally GB, right?
Yep, yes.
It was used in the Colin McRae Memorial Rally and was driven by Ken Block for that back
Really?
in 2008. So in 2009, the 40th anniversary of the Ford Escort, it was driven by Hannu Markula and Bjørn Vogdegaard at the Goodwood Festival of Speed. So that's kind of cool. So it's been at Goodwood before it came here. And then we get to see Hannu Markula is going to be here in the States driving it.
I mean, yeah, I mean,
How cool
what
is that?
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's a true legend of rally. I mean, there are a few names that are as big as Hannu Mikkola from the 70s and the 80s in of rally.
That was
So
the
yeah, that
era of, if you want to win, get a fin, the
yeah.
flying fins, all that kind of stemmed from that era, didn't it?
Yeah, so that'll be pretty epic to have a true rally legend in the UP of Michigan. I mean, that's the yeah. There's another reason for me to kind of like a little bit be regretful that I'm not going to be there.
Yeah, me too. That would be an awesome thing. And then I guess for a limited time, they've got, I guess Dirtfish has some t-shirts that actually have that car on it. Instead of it just being their Dirtfish logo, it has that Mark II Escort. And I'm like, I'm going to have to pick up one of those. That's freaking cool. They should make more shirts with their freaking museum cars on there because they're awesome. I think that's what everybody wants. Anywho, should be an awesome event. My plan is while you're off gallivanting in the woods. I'm gonna have post LSPR. I will be hopefully having Al Dantes Jr. on the show, and he'll give us a little bit of background to how the event went. So that'll be exciting to hear his words on
Cool.
that. Other bits
You will,
of
yeah, say you will have to personally humbly apologize on my behalf for me, because one in our report from Ojibwe, I called his Silverado an F-150, and I think he took a little bit of offense to that. So.
That's right. I forgot about that.
I am an
And
Englishman. A
it's
truck's a
definitely
truck.
bigger than an F-150 too. I mean,
Yeah.
maybe if you missed it, said, "Oh, an F-350," he might be okay. I get it, but come on, yeah, that thing's a big truck. Anyway, I'm sure he'll forgive you. But last bit of rally news. Most of you maybe who've been following kind of what's been posted is the ARA said they've been looking for a new series manager. This came out several weeks ago. It was interesting. We unfortunately had to say goodbye to the competition director, Eric Nelson. They kind of changed, I guess, the definition of the position. They're looking to replace that with a person that's going to be called a series manager. No word on who that will be yet. I'm hoping it's someone that'll work well with us media folks. That's my only concern, is I want to make sure that we have a good relationship, of course. But that is something they are taking applications for, and I know that the board is working hard to fill that as quickly as possible. Yeah, I don't like to see that kind of change necessarily so soon with the new series, but I think they have an idea of where they want to go, and if you're going to make changes, make them early, maybe, and get ready for the next season. So, yeah, so I have to wait and see what comes out with that. I guess that's pretty much it, but we have our little kind of just miscellaneous stuff. You had a little bit that you wanted to finish up with here?
As you may well remember, during the start of the year, I was pushing Louise Cook and her crowdfunding effort to be at Rally Sweden, and we all remember her famous jump at Collins Crest there, where she jumped and her
Hood came
hood
flying up.
flipped up, and she got a bit of global notoriety for that. Well, unfortunately, she's had a whole string of problems since then. Apparently, at Rally Sweden, she was fined €2,000 for not pressing the red button on the rally safe that they have in the WRC or similar, whatever the tracking device, safety device is there. She didn't press the red button when she crashed off, so they fined her €2,000, which is like $2,300. And when you're a small privateer, that to find money like that is, it can be a little bit difficult at times. So she hasn't competed at all during the season, and she was all ready to go for Wales Rally GB, and her sponsor pulled out.
Ah, oh, bummer.
So she's had a string of problems all year. So I'm feeling sorry for her, and I'm gonna miss the fact that she's not gonna be there in a car.
Yeah, I
But
mean, I'm all for us seeing more women in racing and rally, in any motorsport, really. I will say this though, when you step up to the level of racing at a WRC event and all that, I mean, they teach them how to use the device. They should tell you, there should be documentation saying you're gonna get fined if you don't. And you
That's
can
it.
understand the reason for the fine. The reason for the fine is if you don't report that you're okay, the alert goes out to everybody and they stop the rally. And then they're gonna come and investigate, and they're gonna find out that you were just okay, and that you could have delays, which then competitors who are gonna complain because they paid money and they might be able to run the stage, and they're paying for this mileage and it's expensive. So I completely agree with a fine. Some people might be upset with that, but the thing is, you're racing with the big boys.
That's
You got to
it,
be
yeah.
professional like the big boys.
That's it,
That's my
yep.
opinion.
Absolutely agree with you, yeah.
So it sucks. I mean, without a doubt, it sucks. But it's one of those things that you need to get ingrained in you when you start racing at that level.
That's true.
But having the sponsor pull out, yeah, that's hard. But if she hasn't been competing at all, it's like, what's the sponsor paying for? Yeah. I can see that side too. So it's kind of an all-around tough thing. And that kind of also brings around another, like, one of those fines that you can see as being a little extreme. There was a little issue of showing someone's bum. I
Oh gosh,
right?
yes. Some what's the name? What's the guy's name? Jock. He's a Scot, so we call him Jock. Oh gosh, what's the guy's
Yes.
name? But yes, he was
In
marshalling.
Scotland? Scottish, one
Yeah,
of
he was
Scottish
marshalling
rallies,
at a
right?
rally in Scotland, and he mooned a couple of the competitors, and they. Well, this didn't just go as far as like the Motor Sports Association in the UK in England. I mean, he was actually hauled up in front of the local magistrates. He was actually, oh gosh, what? He was fined and had his competition license removed
6 months.
for 6 months. Yeah, I mean.
So here's the deal. This guy, okay, so he was marshaling, so he wasn't an actual competitor. Now, Jacques's been around for a long time, and he's actually a former Scottish rally champion. He's an older guy, he's not super young. It was people that he knew, competitors he knew that were coming by, and they were not at race speed. This is an area where they were just transiting, right? And apparently the photographer, I guess I hear he knew who the photographer it was, or he got the photographer to take a picture because he was going to share it with his friends, just a joke, right? But again, he was acting as a marshal, and yeah, that it ends up getting on Facebook or whatever and gets sent around, shared with his permission. It gets shared, but then it kind of goes viral. And when, yeah, they basically said that, you made our sport look bad. Okay, I get that. And I get, a stern talking down to, maybe even a small financial fine. But they charged him, I think it was £1,000.
13, I've got $1,300.
So
So
$1,300. Okay. So you have $1,300 fine.
6 month
And
ban.
then the 6 month ban as a competitor. Now, the thing is he's acting as a marshal. The fact that he's a competitor should not be a factor at all. And what kind of precedents are you setting? Because one thing about laws and judgments is you reflect on previous judgments. So this precedence that's now been set, how bad is it? First of all, you're not going to get former competitors probably to ever marshal again. Somebody that's planning on competing the next year, or competing at another event, they're going to be like, I guess you're just not going to get the volunteers now because, they're going to be worried about who knows what is going to cause them to maybe not be able to compete in part of the next season. I find that utterly ridiculous. Yes, it was stupid. Yes, it looked bad for the sport because it went viral. But the thing is also it would have just kind of disappeared and gone under the rug if they didn't do this whole thing of pulling him in front of the court and make a big deal out of it. They would have been better served keeping it quiet, telling him, give him a small fine and say, don't do it again.
The mooning thing is something that like we accept here in America.
As far as I know, that
I mean,
pretty
it's
much
like
if you're a competitor and you've gone
crash
off
off.
and you're okay, and your okay sign's out there, all your competitor friends that go by afterwards, there's expected mooning.
It's an expected thing. So I guess it's so that's why we have a problem with the judgment, I suppose. It's Well, maybe I've just been away from Europe for too long. I don't know, but yeah, it does seem over. It seems heavy, too heavy-handed for us. I don't
Yeah, it does seem a little heavy-handed. Again, he was wearing a marshal's vest. It does look bad. He admitted to that, and or maybe just have him do some stuff to help support rallies and or whatever. Do some safety training or something. To teach the other younger marshals how to do a better job and use them as an example. But yeah, what they did is a little extreme. So. Well, my last little bit I want to finish up with. It isn't rally related, but it is a big deal for here at Portland. And, Portland National Raceway is where we have the short super special stages for the Oregon Trail Rally. And big news for us this last week is IndyCar announced the return after a 10-year hiatus of coming to Portland National Raceway. In general, the Pacific Northwest gets completely ignored by national championship racing other than rally. Actually, there's three things I can think of that come to the Pacific Northwest in general, or Oregon, Washington. You have drifting, you have GRC, and you have stage rally. I don't know of anything else motorsports related. And sorry, drifting isn't racing, so I won't even call that. So it's judged. Come on, we know that. So you have pretty much GRC and you have stage rally. So two rally related stuff do national championships here, which is great. No complaints there, but it just doesn't have the draw, of some of the more major and well-sponsored forms of motorsport. So to have IndyCar return to Oregon is awesome. I've been an IndyCar fan since I was a kid. Turning on ABC and watching the Indianapolis 500 every Memorial Day weekend, and they competed at PIR from 1983. I think they said to 2007. So they had a good long run there. So it's got a lot of history. So they competed somewhat local to me, although I lived 75 miles from Portland growing up. But I just really like the sport, not just for the oval racing, but they raced on the road courses and street courses too. It's just the dynamics of it was really cool. And back then, the cars were all a little bit different, you know, some development going on and stuff. But and actually, if you go back to this site, Open Paddock, when we started, I joined the community back in 2013, and the website then it covered several forms of motorsports, including F1, IndyCar, sports cars, and rally. I came in because of my rally knowledge, but I've always been a huge IndyCar fan, and we had a, you know, group of us that would talk IndyCar quite a bit, and or I'd jump in on that part of the call, and it was a lot of fun and whatnot. Since then, other members have kind of come and gone, and when I took over the site a little over a year ago, the focus became nothing but stage rally because it's underserved. I think it needs a little more support, you know, out there as far as commentary and whatnot. So I do what I can for that, but I'm still a huge IndyCar fan. Could be more excited about it coming here. And, you know, next Labor Day weekend, we'll have the whole Mazda Road to Indy do their finale here, both on Saturday and Sunday. So that's the USF 2000, the Pro Mazda, and Indy Lights. They'll be competing here, as well as the, you know, the top guys in the IndyCar. So we'll have Mario Andretti and AJ Foyt and Bobby Rahal and Rick Mears. Those guys are usually in the paddock because they're involved with the teams. But then you'll have Joseph Newgarden, our recent champion, James Hinchcliffe, Graham Rahal, Scott Dixon, Tony Kanaan. I'm going to do my best to get a pit pass, get behind the wall, and see if I can shake hands with some of these guys because they're definitely ones that I've, their personalities that are awesome. And it's some of the closest racing that you will see in any form of motorsport. The cars are kind of spec, yeah, but the drivers are also very consistent, very close. It's just always a good time. So, do you watch any IndyCar?
I watch runs to me is like watching the Indianapolis 500 every year. That's about it for me. But I can see where why I can see why you're excited. I can feel why, because you know, in Minnesota, it's kind of like a similar sort of thing, and we're starved for quality motorsport. You know, it's like the only motorsport event that of any note that's in Minnesota is the NHRA drag racing. The Minnesota is just starved for quality motorsport in the same way, and I can see that if any of the major road racing circuses came to the state, it would fire up people in the same way as you're clearly quite fired up, so.
There's a couple of reasons why I think that they want to come here. One is our demographic. Portland is a high-tech area, right? We have a lot of software developers and engineers and whatnot that are, you know, the people moving in here in the area. There's a huge volume of the 20 to 40-year-old range. So young upstarts and whatnot that are looking for urban activities to do. And that's the other key thing. So you hit the demographic area that they want, which is good. The other thing is, well, how do you draw them in? In a lot of other racetracks, the racetrack is outside of town. Portland National Raceway is actually a city park within the city. The track itself is considered a city park, believe it or not. There is light rail that goes straight from the airport, from downtown. You can take light rail right to the track. It has basically a drop-off that is just outside the track. So you can get lots of people can come in for this event very easily. It's a beautiful area. You know, the Pacific Northwest is always talked about, you know, with our big mountains and our waterfalls and all that stuff. It's a big draw. And I think it just everything that we combine in the area, the fusion of foods that we have here too, all that stuff. I mean, I think just all combined together will make an awesome atmosphere. They do have to do some minor upgrades to the track, some fencing they have to update. There's a couple little minor changes, but Graham Rahal did drive the track in a. It was a rainy day, but he was out there in a Honda Civic because he's, you know, a Honda driver, and he said that the track not only looks good, it looks faster than ever. They repaved it recently. They've widened a couple of the sections of the track. The approach just before the back straight is very different than what it used to be when he was there here in 2007. So it's gonna you're gonna need to really dial in your car with some compromise here. You have two long straightaways and some really tight twisty sections. So do you go low downforce? for the straights,
Mm-hmm.
or do you do higher down force for the twisty bits?
Yeah.
It's going to be a compromise, and that's always the most fun, is to see who gets it right, you know?
Yeah.
So, should be a good time.
Cool. Sounds fun. Yeah, maybe I'll come over.
There we go. Hey, while you're making that West Coast swing we were talking about,
This West Coast
right?
swing gets
That's
longer and
right.
longer.
You're gonna do a class with with Oz Rally Pro, right? With Alex and Rhiannon. Then you're gonna swing up to Dirtfish, and you're gonna do at least a half day course, and then you're gonna come down to PIR and watch the race, and then you're gonna go over to Rally Idaho, which is 2 weeks later. See?
Oh,
Now you've got it figured out.
have you got a spare bed that I could Oh.
See, I got you all planned out.
You've got it all sorted out. You're my manager now. You're my
There we
manager.
go. Well,
Okay.
I think that about does it for this Rallycast. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We've got all kinds of stuff that we've been posting this year. If you haven't gone back and listened to other podcasts, we've had, well, we started this year with Anders Green of NASA Rally Sport. We had the chief game designer for Dirt Rally and Dirt 4, Paul Coleman. We've had Eric Nelson of ARA when he was here talking about the juniors earlier in the year. Jeremiah Johnson, who organized that Southern Ohio Forest Rally, of which you competed in. That's right. Co-drivers Alex and Rhiannon Gelsomino. We've had drivers William Petro, Savage Dave Rally, and just this week, Sam Albert of Dirtfish Rally School. There's a lot of good content out there. So listen to some of our older stuff. It's still really good and really relevant. Give us a like, give us a follow, give us a good rating on iTunes. It does make a difference. We appreciate it when you do that. And I guess that's it. Have a good week, everyone. Ian, stay safe, have a fun trip, and we'll be following you on Facebook, all right?
Okay, keep your eyes open. I'll be posting.
All right. Cheers, everybody. Have a good
Cheers.
night.
Bye.